Tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 91. We're still the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin, and we are a proud member of the Comic Book Podcast Network. So you can join us over there at comicspodcasts.com, along with a whole bunch of other great shows. I only know the great ones, so I have to kind of assume that they all are great over there. So we are going to, as we have been for the last several weeks, continuing on our merry way and counting down the last few Walt Simonson issues of Thor. I think we have four left now. I know, it's kind of sad because it has been, in a lot of ways, one of the most pivotal runs on Thor. Certainly the most pivotal since Lee and Kirby, who really sort of established the language of the series. And I'd like to ask a favor of you listeners out there. And there's a lot of you out there who I just haven't heard from at all. The silent majority, as I like to say. We hear, you know, from the same listeners quite frequently. But what I'd really like to do on a show, once we wrap up the Walt Simonson run, whenever that is, because it's gonna be pretty soon. It's gonna be like a month away. I'd like to hear you people out there who are listening to the show right now. I'd like to hear, if you're a fan of the Simonson Thor, what your favorite bits of it were. Did you really like the Lorelei thing? Did you really like Thor Frog? Did you really like what we're going to be talking about this episode, Fin Fang Foom? Did you really like the Surtur saga, Beta Ray Bill, all that? And I would really like to hear from you. Now, I do hope that everyone comes to the Facebook group and signs up and you know, joins us over there, and we can have some conversations there, but not really for this topic. What I'd like people to do is to send me emails. You can send me voice files. You can do whatever you like as far as, you know, creativity. Something that I can share on the show, though. I mean, if you draw me a picture, well, you know, I would really enjoy the picture. But it's really difficult to share on the show with people other than describing it. And that doesn't make good radio as far as I'm concerned. Oh, wait, that's what I do every week, is describe pictures to every... Okay, you can do a picture if you want. But no, I would really like to hear from people by email on this. And, you know, what did Simonson's Thor mean to you? And if I don't get any responses, then we just aren't going to talk about it. But I hope to. I hope that, you know, because I know there's a lot of you out there. I know there's several hundred listeners out there, what I call the silent majority, who are just sitting out there and they're listening and they're, you know, they're not feeling led to participate. And that's fine. I mean, there's always people who listen and don't participate. And that's all part of the podcast thing. I mean, I've been doing it long enough, you know, because before this show, of course, I was doing a couple other shows and will be doing other shows, I'm sure, in the future, as along with this one. But I really would like people to write in and let us know, you know, what your favorite bits of the Walt Simonson Thor run are, what you think his run meant for the character. You know, just other people's thoughts other than mine. You get enough of my own thoughts, I think, and I would really like to read out what other people think. All right, so with that, I am going to move on to our review. Oh, wait, no, I have to give the email first. The email address. Yes, it's all bits and pieces here, folks, as my good friend Chris Reardon would say. The email address is radiofreeasgard, like the name of the show, radiofreeasgard@gmail.com, and I'd love to hear from you over there. All right, so without any further ado, let's move on with our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
And this week we are going to be covering Thor number 379. This has a cover date of May of 1987, retailed for 75 cents. Cover art is by Walter Simonson and shows Thor, little teeny itty bitty Thor in the very bottom of the cover, whirling his hammer around, getting ready to face off against this giant orange dragon looking thing. And this cover is designed to evoke a certain era of Marvel history. In fact, I think that this really is an homage cover. Going back to Strange Tales number 89 from 1961, which was the first appearance of this character, this big orange dragon guy called Fin Fang Foom. And so Thor's facing off against him on the cover. And for those of you who aren't really familiar, now Marvel back before they started doing superhero stuff, this would have been pre-Fantastic Four number one. So we're talking mid to late 50s, very early 1960s. Marvel's bread and butter were these monster books. And they all kind of had ridiculous names like Goom and Bebimbop and Fin Fang Foom and, you know, Sis Boom Ba, the cheerleader who walked like a man. You know, that sort of thing. And they weren't very successful doing that. In fact, it got to the point where Marvel was going to go out of business when they decided, hey, okay, let's copy the Justice League and kind of create a superhero team. That became the Fantastic Four. And that kind of led to the Marvel Age of Comics as we understand it. Of course, that's a very abbreviated form. But anyway, so Fin Fang Foom was one of these characters that was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby back in Strange Tales number 89 from 1961. Many, many years later, in fact, I think it was about 2005, Stan Lee did an interview where he remembered coming up with this name, and it was inspired by the name of a movie that he had seen as maybe a 10, 11, 12-year-old back in the 1930s. Now, a little bit of research will show that this was actually a movie called Chu Chin Chow, which was the film adaptation of a famous musical. Yeah, it's set in China, and basically it's this horrible racist thing from the 1920s. You probably don't really want to see it. Needless to say, the scansion of the title is really the only similarity between the Fin Fang Foom comic and Chu Chin Chow, other than the fact that I think the Fin Fang Foom story did take place in China. And I think that's really the only similarity. I'm pretty sure that musical did not have a big orange dragon in it. And this character, for some reason, has captured the imagination of various Marvel creators over the years. And so they keep bringing the damn thing back. I think it's kind of a silly character myself, but I have to say, of all the monsters that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby created in these old, Strange Tales issues and that sort of thing, Journey into Mystery issues, he's probably the most memorable, or one of the most memorable of all of them. I know that there's still a couple of them running around the Marvel Universe, at least prior to the whole Marvel Now thing. I'm really not so sure. Anyway, so we have this cover of Thor, and he's facing off against a giant orange dragon-looking thing, and he's sort of kind of like a Jack Kirby version of an Asian dragon. So, which is to say, he doesn't really look like an Asian dragon, but he does sort of have that sort of look that's reminiscent of an Asian dragon. So he's got this big long orange neck. He's got these sort of fish fin things sticking out the side of his face. He's got this big open mouth, and he can spit acid, and he can fly. He's got little wings on him, and he wears a pair of orange swim trunks, which makes absolutely no sense because he's supposed to be a dragon. Now, of course, that leads to another question is like, well, where does he get these giant orange swim trunks? I really doubt that even in the Marvel Universe, there's a place where you can buy giant orange swim trunks. Though, you never know. Maybe the Celestials and Galactus and the Watcher and those people, maybe they buy swim trunks at some sort of, cosmic Kmart, and all they have is orange and, bright primary colors like they would have had in, 1960s Marvel comics. That's a very, very big and tall shop. But I don't even want to dwell on it because it's just too silly. I'm just going to assume, for the sake of making the story make sense, that he makes them out of his own shed skin. Anyway, beautiful cover here by Walt Simonson. I do think it's supposed to be an homage to Fin Fang Foom's first appearance, and even has the really thick border around the word bubble, like in these really early Marvel comics, including the really early Thor comics. And Fin Fang Foom is saying, "There's nowhere left to run, Thor. This is the hour of Fin Fang Foom." As you'll see when we get into the story, Fin Fang Foom is the rather erudite sort of dragon, so I figure he needs kind of a more refined type of accent. So we open up to the splash page. Stan Lee presents the mighty Thor. "There were giants in those days," or "A Discourse Between Heroes and Villains." The writer was Walter Simonson. Art is by Sal Buscema. Lettering is by John Workman. Coloring is by Evelyn Stein. That's a new name. Editing by Ralph Macchio. And the editing-in-chief by Jim Shooter. And we open up where we left off last issue, with Loki waking up in the ruins of his laboratory. We get a little bit of a recap. Not really much, but a couple panels that have a recap. And Loki's like, "My home, my laboratory, everything destroyed. Someone will pay dearly for this outrage. But how? And why am I still alive? The frost giants breached my keep, and though I slew several, they had overthrown me and taken me prisoner. So much I remember before I lost consciousness." And so he casts a spell to find out what had happened in here, find out why he's still alive. And he sees Thor, and Thor smashing the giants with his fancy new armor that we talked about last time. And we see Iceman kind of slumped against the machines in the background. And Thor's beaten up on the giants. And we see, you know, Thor is sort of his speech that he gave. You don't hear the dialogue or anything, but you know, it's sort of the "old Loki is so brave and I'm so ashamed" speech that we got. And carries off Iceman back to Earth. And Loki is upset by this turn of events. He's like, "Oh, the shame of this perfidious vision. 'Tis all too clear. My hated stepbrother, whom I would destroy, hath saved my life. Would that mine eyes had been torn from their very sockets ere I had seen this sight." Well, you're the one who brought it up, dude, so don't complain. Incidentally, great Stan Lee imitation on that Loki dialogue there. That's great stuff. "But Thor is not my immediate concern. Where are those whose heinous treachery placed the life of Loki in debt to the one being who he hates most in all the nine worlds? Where are the frost giants of Grundroth?" And he goes up some stairs and into another room of the castle, and he's got a big old big screen TV-looking thing. It actually looks like a sort of a very, actually, kind of Jack Kirby-ish big monster head mirror sort of thing with a big, huge mouth. And he shoots a magical bolt out of his hand with a spack. And it's a cosmic voyeuroscope. And he sees the giants have gone to Earth. And he's like, "Midgard, even as I watch, they emerge through a dimensional portal from Jotunheim. They have broken Odin's ban, daring to venture into the mortal world." Now, that's something we really haven't explored in the series yet, that apparently most Asgardian creature, you know, the giants and so forth, are forbidden from going to Earth. But, you know, hey, Odin's not really around at this point in the series, is he? So I guess they feel okay. So the giants have gone to where else? Norway. They're pining for the fjords. So the the giants are in Norway along a fjord, and they've got a big old rope with a big hook on it. That's interesting. So we have Grunthrock, and he's like, "Be careful with that line. We may need every foot of it. Thanks to Loki, we know that Hela has cursed Thor with brittle bones that can be easily shattered. And though his armor protects him now from the clubs of even giants, it will not save him. For we shall call up the oldest and mightiest of Thor's ancient foes from the sea, and then nothing will prevent the Thunder God's total destruction." And Loki likes what he's seeing here, and he's like,
"An excellent course of action, Grundroth, and one I would have undertaken myself in time. Perhaps our brief liaison has actually provided your dull wits with a spark of inspiration. No matter. Thor's eventual doom is certain. Hela hath seen to that. And your doom is equally certain. Loki shall see to that."
And Loki is climbing up these very Dr. Seussian-looking stairs to the top of his castle. There is so much wasted space in Loki's castle because there's like these great big rooms with nothing in them. Anyway, so he eventually gets to the top of the tower and his throne room. There's like a big hole in the walls. You remember the giants came through there? No, I don't remember what happened there. Anyway, something came through and smashed everything up. It was probably the giants. And Loki enters the throne room. He says, "Though much of my hall lies in ruins beneath my feet, the uttermost tower of sorcery remains untouched." It doesn't look untouched. Things are wrecked. The only thing left is this chair. There's like a brazier and it's on the ground. There's a big hole in the wall. He's got a very funny definition of untouched. "The uttermost tower of sorcery remains untouched, protected by spells that only Odin himself could undo. And it is from here that Loki creates his greatest works of magical art. Now shall I loose the bonds of flesh from the spirit. Asgard cannot hold the ambition nor the hatred of Loki. Midgard shall I seek." And Loki lets his spirit, it's like his astral form, sort of green mist kind of float up out of his body and is flying down towards Earth. And he's flying down towards Earth. Now, you know, gone are the days, I guess, when Loki could just teleport himself to Earth. I mean, that would be too easy, wouldn't it be? But anyway, he heads down to Earth, and he's heading towards the Andes Mountains. And they talk about he's going to this vast landing field, abandoned but still surrounded with an aura of mystery. I think that this is actually a reference to the Celestials. Loki's spirit is kind of flying there, and it talks about this landing strip still reverberating with the echoes of the majestic beings who stood there in the greatest of their glory, blah, 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 blah. We actually get a mention of the Celestials here. And, Loki's flying around in ghostly form looking for what he's looking for. And he says, "Softly, softly. Though the Celestials have long since departed," which happened back in Thor number 300, "not even Odin could truly fathom their motives, and I must do nothing that might alert them or arouse their curiosity wherever they may now roam. But that which I seek is here, and the sooner I find it and depart, success! Yon gleaming lake of solid slag can only be my prize." Now, I don't think Loki really knows what slag is. Now, it just happens I used to know this guy who worked for U.S. Steel. So I know what slag is. Slag is not molten metal. Slag is a waste product that is created when you refine metal. So it's like this crumbly sort of crusty, like it's like almost like solidified ash. And it's got metal in it, but it's not like melted metal. Now, of course, I'm too lazy to go look this up, but I'm pretty sure that what it is, it's the minerals in the metal that are derived from the ore. It's like the part of the ore that's not useful for anything. And normally, after slag is removed from molten metal, it is taken, it's crushed up, and it's used to build roads and things like that because it's really not good for much of anything else. So anyway, if you see references to melting something down into slag, and you see this a lot in comics, I can guarantee you that 99 times out of 100, they don't know what slag is. That's your science lesson for today. "The days of Grundroth and his followers are truly numbered," and Loki's gloating, and he's found this big puddle of metal, and we'll find out what that is soon enough. So we then cut back to Asgard, where we have a familiar character. Now this, as we know, is Curse. And he's this armored, evil character that was created by Malekith, the Dark Elf. Now, remember that Malekith kind of created Curse against his will. And he hated Malekith because of that. Eventually, he tracked Malekith down and killed him. So, ever since he killed Malekith, he's just been kind of chilling in Asgard, not really doing anything because he's lost the will to live. And apparently, according to the caption, he has been sitting in this room in Volstagg's house because Heimdall brought him there to listen to the laughter of Volstagg's children. Now, that seems to me to be a really horrible idea. Hey, I know, this dangerous armored dude with the spikes all over him, let's bring him to a place with lots of children. That's a great idea. Anyway, the laughter of children did not really affect Curse, and he just still kind of sitting there like a lump. But now he hears the sound of children crying. And that actually gets him up and moving around. and hear voices, Fandral, Hogan, please wake up. And it's Mick and Kevin, the twin boys from Earth. We saw them last issue, remember, with Sif and Hildy and Fandral and Hogan. They're all getting sick.
Miss Sif, please wake up. Hildy's awful sick. It's no use, Kevin. It's like they're asleep and can't hear us. And they're cold. So's Hildy. Mick, what are we gonna... Look, it's another Asgardian. And he's not sick. Mister, please, you've got to help us.
And you know, Mick and Kevin, they think that Curse is another god. And so they're kind of explaining what's going on. All the gods are mysteriously ill. And they want to get to Baldur and try to figure out if he can do anything about it. And we see from Curse's point of view that you know, he kind of remembers the dark elf children from the past, and he decides to help them. And so he picks the three children up, so it'd be Mick and Kevin and Hildy, and carries them away. And one of the twins is like,
do you know how to get to Baldur's, mister? He's president of Asgard. He's got to know what to do.
And we then shift scenes back to Earth and to Manhattan Island, where we have Thor and Iceman, who was rescued from Loki's castle last issue, and Thor is dropping him off at X-Factor headquarters. And Thor's like, are you sure that I should leave you here? You still radiate the cold Loki forced from you with his devices, and your form begins to recrystallize to ice. Mayhap a hospital would be a more appropriate destination. And Iceman's like, no, I do feel a little shaky still, but I can't really go to a hospital, at least not like this. The others, they'll help me. I can hear them coming now. Now, this leads into X-Factor number 17, which we're not going to look at, because that has really very little to do with Thor. So then Thor flies away, and the other members of X-Factor find Bobby, and so that's kind of where that goes. And Thor decides, for some reason, to go back to his empty apartment, which is like the third time he's actually ever been there. And there's still nothing there except for a mattress on the floor. And Thor's thinking to himself, and he's feeling sorry for himself, as he always does. I know that the fear and the mistrust of mutants infects many here on Earth, including those who minister to the sick. For such is the nature of humans, that they are always suspicious of those who differ from them, and not even the power of Odin could have changed it. In the meantime, my humble abode in Brooklyn awaits, where I dwelt as Sigurd Jarlsson. And for once, I welcome its emptiness and quiet, for I have to consider nothing less than the destiny of the Thunder God himself. What I must do next may begin the final chapter in the life of Thor, but come what may, I shall bear my fate like a son of gods. We then shift scenes back to Norway and the giants, and they are making a boat out of an iceberg, which... Okay, all right. I guess that frost giants can do stuff like that. So they're hacking at this iceberg with their axes, and they create a kind of a crude raft out of it. And they go sailing off into the sea. And it says, out towards the coast, towards the Lofoten Islands. Now, I don't know where that is, but apparently there's a maelstrom there. Now, that's one of these interesting... phenomenon. There's one off the coast of Scotland called the Corrievreken as well, and there are these sort of natural tidal whirlpools and stuff that, you know, a lot of ancient people, the ancient Norse especially, thought that these were places where monsters lived. So there's actually a historical antecedent to this destination where these giants are going. So they float out towards these islands, and the giants are talking,
far enough. Here the currents of the maelstrom flow around the islands, and tell us that the one we seek is beneath us stirring. To you, Snawtree, goes the honor of summoning the great enemy of Thor, who shall destroy him for us.
And this is some dorky-looking giant, and he gets handed the rope with a big hook on it. He's like, ugh!
Take the end of this cable and carry it to the bottom of the sea.
Duh!
Swim around a bit, and when you find the great enemy, you shall recognize him. Ask him to come up, and do not forget to hold thy breath.
And the stupid giant jumps into the sea with his big hook. And we then shift scenes back to Asgard, and we find Curse and Mick and Kevin and Hildy And Curse has brought them to Baldur's Palace. And we see Baldur is laying there on his throne. And the Enchantress and Heimdall are laying on the floor, along with the Vizier, the warlock guy, Alaric, I think is his name. Kevin is like,
"Oh no, Mick, it's happened here too. It's President Baldur. He's a statue like the rest of them."
And Baldur's not quite dead. And he's like, "Eh?" And he says something in Raven to the two ravens. And then I guess the ravens are unaffected by all this. And he's talking to Hugin and Munin. And the kids are like,
"He's still alive, but he's gone crazy. No, look, Kev, he's talking to the birds."
And the birds fly over to Baldur. And they take a glass flask out of his belt, where he's stashed this really skinny little glass flask. You'd think it would have broken being in his belt, but okay. And one of the ravens drops it in one of the children's hands. I think, I'll just say it's Kevin, because I think it's Kevin. It says,
"They're trying to tell us something."
And they're going, "Caw, caw."
"But I can't talk bird talk. Mick, what am I supposed to do with it?"
Hooray, I was right. It was Kevin. That's because I had a 50-50 chance. So anyway, we shift back to the coast of Norway and the giants, and the giant is down in the water, and Grunthrock is saying, "What's taking that fool Snotri so long? He cannot stay here until the midnight sun sets." And then he feels a pull on the rope with a hook. He's like, "Huh? By the eyebrows of Ymir, the line is taut. The great enemy has taken the bait. Pull, you misbegotten son of Frostbite! Pull, and by the snows of Jotunheim, we'll yank him to the surface before he knows what we're about! Pull!" Now, this makes no sense, because as I understand it, when you pull on a rope and you're in a boat, the boat will move. You're not going to pull anything up from the bottom. The boat is going to actually move. Anyway, they pull on the rope, and then the rope breaks with a crack, and the giants go flying. And we see a big, orange, semi-Asian-looking dragon rise up from the water with a strash. And he's saying, "This had better be good." And the giant's like, "You're not big enough. You can't be him. Who are you?" We recognize him, of course, as the giant dragon from the cover, Fin Fang Foom. "A foul-tasting snowball awakens me out of a sound slumber. Some ragged fishermen try to catch me with a clothesline that wouldn't hook a minnow. They insult my appearance, and then fail to recognize me. Rarely have I encountered such ill-mannered food so eager to be eaten. But perhaps a midnight snack would be just the thing to restore my good humor."
"We're no food. Grundroth am I, leader of the Frost Giants. And we seek the great Midgard Serpent itself, enemy of Thor. Not some garrulous refugee from the fisheries of Earth."
"Watch your tongue, little man. Fin Fang Foom am I, oldest of dragons, and you are less to me than fish bait. But what, pray tell, is a Thor? Is he worth your lives?"
"He's the god of thunder, mightiest warrior of the Asgardians, and wielder of the hammer Mjolnir that would make fish bait out of you."
"Dreamer, and why do you seek this Midgard whatever?"
"Jormungand is the world serpent who encircles Earth, and he is Thor's mortal enemy. Now, as never before, he has a chance to destroy his hated foe."
"Indeed?"
"Hela, the goddess of death, has cursed Thor with an old man's bones that can be shattered. This is the time for the serpent to strike while Thor broods in New York, far away from his friends in Asgard. We merely act in his best interests."
"And your own as well, doubtless. But I should like to meet this warrior who wields a weapon mighty enough to defy the power of Fin Fang Foom. And if he proves amusing, perhaps I won't devour the rest of you when I return."
And Fin Fang Foom takes off and flies away. I kind of wonder how he can fly with these little itty-bitty wings he has. But then I kind of feel the same way about the even ittier-bittier little wings on the Submariner's ankles. So anyway... So the giants are pretty confused by all this. It's like,
"Grundroth, who is that? He cannot possibly be the one we sought."
"My feeling is that our fishing may not have been in vain after all. I wonder if we should have described Thor's new appearance to him."
And we then shift scenes to New York, and indeed to Brooklyn, where Thor is hanging out at the local park, sitting next to a really weird purple tree. So I don't know what that's about. Anyway, so Thor's sitting on a park bench, and his helmet's sitting on the thing next to him, and he's feeling sorry for himself.
No matter how I consider the matter, the answer's always the same. I must return to Hel and face Hela, force her to lift her curse. But she will be on her guard. No doubt she even expects an attack. Stealth seems impossible. My power is no longer what it was, thanks to her implacable spite. But no matter what happens, I shall resolutely embrace my destiny. If only, and we see the shadow of Fin Fang Foom kind of sneaking up behind Thor here, smashes the park bench just with a scrum and sends Thor flying. And Fin Fang Foom is there. Now turn, little one, turn and stare into the face of death. For I am Fin Fang Foom, and the son of Odin will learn to his eternal regret. Oh, I beg your pardon. I fear that I mistook you for someone else, the Red Cape, you know.
Actually, there are quite a few of them worn in my line of work.
And that is?
The odd job of removal here and there. I take it you're searching for someone in particular. Perhaps I might be of some assistance? I'm fairly familiar with most of the other wearers of such capes. Whom do you seek?
Thor, the Thunderer, son of Odin.
It's a snort, sorry.
Not a social call, I presume.
Hardly. Thor is an ancient enemy, and I have recently discovered that he is suffering under a considerable handicap. One hates to do the dishonorable thing and take unfair advantage, but really history only loves winners, Custer and the Alamo excepted. And the historians care nothing for the moral niceties of the victors, especially in this day and age. A pity, really. But if the old stories are true, Thor and I are destined some day to slay each other in a fair fight.
Poppycock. But I intend to forestall any such possibility. I know of this Thor. You hardly look large enough to provide him a worthy opponent. The deception of appearances. It's not like the good old days when life and death were simpler and better. Take these frail mortals who gather about us now.
Yeah, and you see there's people hiding and watching from a distance.
Who would have thought they would harness power enough to one day challenge the gods themselves? The lesson of the ants, strength in numbers.
The name Fin Fang Foom is unfamiliar to me, says Thor.
Merely a nom de guerre. But I've half a mind to lay waste to these creatures and their hovels right now. A suitable demonstration of my power for the doubting Thomas before me.
And Thor, I actually kind of love this little scene here.
I think you should reconsider. 'Tis true that mankind has harnessed the power of the atom, and such nuclear devices might harm even a dragon. But the cost, should you remain within the city, would be enormous in terms of human suffering. I myself am a so-called superhero, an extremely local version of a tactical nuclear weapon, if you will. My job is to prevent such suffering if I can, and if you threaten the city, you will find that you must face me first.
You speak well for one so overmatched. You're certainly the most interesting food I've met in quite some time. I must remember to thank those little giants before I eat them.
And the people are running away, and it's like, wow, time to alert the media. There's a $50 prize for calling in a scoop to WCRP Radio. That must be a real station, I don't know.
But we dragons are nothing if not sporting. I'll make you a bargain. If you can lift my foot, little hero, we shall go and find some place far from the maddening crowd, and I will kill you there in peace and quiet. But if you fail, I shall kill you here, along with thousands of your fellow ants. And if you do not accept the challenge, I shall slay the entire city.
And Thor steps forward, and he goes to lift Fin Fang Foom's foot. And it doesn't budge, not even a little bit. And so Thor tries harder and harder, and he plants himself, and is really, you know, pouring sweat down off him. He finally manages to lift the dragon's foot off the ground, and he's like, "Rrr!" And Fin Fang Foom is like, "Oh, well done, little one. Climb upon my back, and we shall depart this noxious city for the green hills of Earth and a cleaner battlefield, where an honest warrior may perish in glory."
And Thor's like, "A moment whilst I retrieve my helmet. You seem quite sure of yourself and your powers, O dragon of legend. Do you not remember the aphorism about the mills of the gods? 'Tis said they grind slowly, but exceedingly small. I've always thought that aphorisms were the refuge of minds too small to encompass an original thought hero. No offense intended, of course.
None taken, dragon.
I had always thought they were more accurately considered the symbols of a larger wisdom that spoke directly to the heart and not the mind. But of course, there are those to whom symbols themselves are anathema.
Only to those with no hearts.
And have you a heart?
Merely the illusion of one.
Has the illusion any reality, dragon?
That one may surprise you, little hero. We are being followed.
And Thor says, doubtless by those to whom symbols are the very bread of existence, the press.
They live by symbols and die by them too. But in the end, they'll find no story here, only the illusion of one.
You speak glibly of illusions, dragon. Is there nothing you believe in?
That question is rarely asked of dragons, hero. Our overwhelming presence is enough to silence the most curious tongue. A dragon believes only in himself.
But you have lifted my foot, has been done only once before since the beginning of time. And out of respect for that feat, I will grant you a boon. I will tell you my name before I destroy you.
And Fin-Fang-Foom starts to change, and it looks like his body is starting to rip open.
My true home is in the deeps of time beyond the reach of clocks. I know much about illusions, little hero. Ever and anon I wear them as I wander in the world. But now I have brought us into my time, and you are doomed. Never again shall you lift a limb nor draw a breath. No breeze shall caress thy cheek. No dawn anoint thy brow with light. The time of illusion has passed.
And as he's saying this, his body is ripping apart, and this big green, like, smoke is coming up out of his body. And Thor's just standing there watching all this. And the next page, we have a full-page spread of kind of Fin-Fang-Foom is ripped all the way open, and there's this big, huge, sinuous serpent sort of dragon, much more nasty-looking than Fin-Fang-Foom, is rising up out of his body. And he says, on the name of the illusion is Jormungand, for I am truly the world's serpent, and the truth shall be thy death knell. You are nothing, a simple-minded hero who spoke too well and knew too little, till Heimdall's horn doth sound on that final day, and Odin is swallowed by the wolf. The life of Jormungand is deathless. My weird lies in the hands of the thunder god of the Vikings, and in his hands only, and none other does the Midgard serpent fear. But Thor is already a mere shadow of his former glory. On the day I find him, I will break the ancient prophecies and slay him. Then will Jormungand tower above the fates themselves. So then we have this weird little two-panel interlude. So apparently what has happened is as Jormungand breaks out of his skin, everything in the world is frozen in time. So we see that these helicopters are frozen in mid-flight. We see a hummingbird frozen in mid-flight while drinking out of a flower. And so this is kind of big magic that's happened since Jormungand has exposed himself, as the case may be. Yeah, I mean, I guess it fits. I mean, he's kind of just exposed his big green dragon to the world anyway. So the giants are trekking across the mountains at this point, and they're, I don't know where they're going. Maybe they're heading back to Asgard. And one of the giants is like,
Grundroth, what's this? The birds are frozen in their flight. The wind no longer howls.
It cannot be, but it is. It can only mean one thing. Time has stopped in its eternal course, and that means the world serpent is loose. For only mythic creatures move in the time of the beginning, where all things mortal cease their endless spinnings. That dragon! That babbling idiot! He was truly Jormungand! And if he has shed his illusions, then he must have found Thor! Quickly, giants! Our greatest enemy is doomed, and we must see it with our own eyes.
And they go running off, and I don't know what they're thinking. They're going to go all the way to Brooklyn, or the countryside near New York? I don't know what they're thinking here. It makes no sense. Anyway, so we then shift back to Jormungand and Thor, and they're still talking here, and Jormungand he's really nasty looking compared to Fin-Fang-Foom. I really like the design of him, and you can tell that he was designed by Walt Simonson. And I have to say, I actually think that Sal Buscema has done it. Really an admirable job of drawing Jormungand in this issue. But so they're still chatting here.
What a pity, little one. I neglected to ask your name before I shed my cloak of illusion and revealed myself in all my glory. Never mind. When you are dead, I shall take another guise and gather thy friends in mourning. The women shall weep their lamentations and cry thy name aloud, and I shall know my foe. But now you must face your gods nameless and afraid. And Thor is not going to take that lying down. He says, only a fool has no fear, serpent, and I am no fool. And the serpent's like, what? But I have many names, serpent, even as you. Vingthor the Hurler, Longbeard's son, Harod's foeman, too. In Tyr's ancestral home, wisest Hymir knew my name is Vyr. Unhappy Hrungnir's playmate, some have called me. East of Elvagar and Giant Home, they whisper, Lord is name. My father called me son. My mother called me darling. And beneath the vaults of heaven, I am Thor Odinson, the Thunderer, Jormungand's fear. And Jormungand's like, Rack! For I am the wielder of Mjolnir, the Crusher, the enchanted mallet of thunder and lightning that your father hates. It too has another name. In the fury of the storm, it howls its rage and shrieks its name aloud. Do you hear it, serpent? It is thy bane I wield, Loki's child, the end of all illusion. The hammer sings the death of Jormungand. And Jormungand is striking at Thor. Thor is summoning down the lightning, and they're about to tangle. And then we have next issue. Thor battles against his greatest foe, the Midgard Serpent. And that is Thor number 379. What an issue. I love this issue. This, you know, and I've been saying, you know, this is sort of lesser Simonson to me. The sort of the later period of his run, and it seemed as though maybe he was running out of ideas, and the art kind of sucks a lot of the time. And we've got this, all of a sudden in the middle of this, as we kind of wrap this up, this gorgeous issue. And I don't mean necessarily gorgeous from an art standpoint, though there's some really good art in this. I have to say, Sal Buscema drawing the Midgard Serpent based on Walt Simonson's design, obviously, but it still looks pretty good. I mean, he did a really nice job on this. This is probably one of Sal Buscema's better art jobs on these last few pages of the issue, where Jormungand reveals himself. And I love the story. I really like this idea of Fin-Fang-Foom being the sort of genteel dragon who is violent and evil, but he still would like to have a conversation with you. And I really kind of like that. I don't really remember if Fin-Fang-Foom was like that in other appearances, because I really don't remember that many other appearances of Fin-Fang-Foom that I have read. But it makes sense that they would be portraying him in a way that is consistent with his character to avoid people from maybe guessing that, you know, this character of Fin-Fang-Foom is actually the Midgard Serpent in disguise. Now, this portrayal of the Midgard Serpent is at odds with other portrayals of the Midgard Serpent in the Thor comics. Generally speaking, Jormungand has been depicted as being the sort of saucer-eyed, big green worm thing of, like, minimal or no intellect. And so this is really kind of a departure for him. Now, I do happen to know, and, you know, not to ruin it for anybody who might be interested in the character, is that really Jormungand is not Fin-Fang-Foom. This was just an illusion that Jormungand kind of put on to fool the giants. So there really is a Fin-Fang-Foom in the Marvel Universe, and it's not Jormungand the World Serpent. Though I thought that was a pretty cool idea of taking this somewhat memorable character from the old Lee Kirby monster comics and actually making him into a major mythological figure. I thought that was a pretty cool idea, but alas, it was not to be. Fin-Fang-Foom has actually appeared since then in the Marvel Universe, though in not quite the same appearance, you know, that he is here. I have to say about Sal Buscema's work on this is that he definitely does a good job of channeling Kirby when drawing Fin-Fang-Foom. I think he does a really good job, actually, of drawing him. Maybe Sal Buscema should be drawing monster comics as opposed to drawing people, because I think that his Fin-Fang-Foom actually looks pretty darn good. And I love the story. I think this is one of Simonson's best of the later runs. And it's a lot of fun, and that's what comics should be. Now, my other observation about this story is that this is legitimately very mythic. This harkens back to a lot of the Norse myths, where you have Odin in disguise, pretending to be somebody other than the Allfather.
And we've seen a little bit of that in the comics as well. If you go back to like Thor 339, 340, back during the Fafnir story, that story of the last Viking, when he was the Wanderer, you know. And Odin is known for playing that kind of game. But this is something very consistent with Norse mythology in general. People who aren't who they appear to be. The story of Rig is pretty much based on that. And we haven't covered the story of Rig yet in our mythology section, but we'll be doing that eventually. But this is something that I like because it is very consistent and very mythic. And that is one of the things about Walt Simonson's run on Thor that I really, really like. All right, so I guess that's about it for this issue. Now, next issue, we will have Thor number 380 and the all-splash page issue with art by Walt Simonson. So that'll be awesome. So we will see you next time. Thanks very much for listening. Once again, you know, feel free to chime in with your thoughts on the Simonson run, and I will try to compile people's thoughts and their opinions, and we will read them out or listen to them. Not next show, but this is something that I'm working on that we're going to do after we're done with the Simonson run, which, of course, is going to be just a few weeks from now. All right, so thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.